to Podcastonomics. This is Craig Hewitt from PodcastMotor.com. Today on the show, I have David Jackson from the School of Podcasting. As you'll hear on the show today, David is an expert all things podcasting, and he has been teaching podcasting for a handful of years now and has brought a lot of people from zero to really some great success. So I'm really excited to have David on the show today. We dive into all sorts of things related to podcasting, how to monetize your podcast, how to get started, and then, some of the things that he feels like are missing in podcasting these days and where opportunities might be for those of us who are online entrepreneurs and feel like we could really make a difference in the world of podcasting. As you'll hear in the show today, David is a really great guest and really knowledgeable about podcasts, and so I'm really excited to have him on this episode of Podcastonomics. So without any further ado, welcome onto the show, David Jackson from the School of Podcasting. Great. And so on the show today, we have David Jackson. Dave, how you doing?
Oh, awesome. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks. Doing great. It's winding down the day here for me, but this is actually my favorite time of day to do a podcast because it's like the coffee is finally accumulated and, I'm standing up at my desk and I'm ready to rock. It's awesome.
There you go. You got your standing desk. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's funny. It's a dresser we found on the side of the road, and it was just the perfect height because like it's tough to find something that's the perfect height. And yeah. So it's like a dresser we found on the side of the road. It's like some IKEA special, and I built a little thing for my monitor, and it's great.
Awesome.
I don't feel bad about screwing the microphone stand right into the desk. So, hey, give me some little background. Give me your like Superman origin story of how you got into podcasting and coaching and everything you're up to.
Yeah. My background, I mean, I've been helping people understand technology forever. I tell people at one point I was actually training people how to use their fax machine. So I go way back with technology. And the fun thing with training is anytime sales doesn't hit their quota, somebody in training is going to get whacked because why work smarter at any for any reason.
Sure.
And so I'd gone back to actually get I'd been doing teaching, but I didn't have a teaching degree. And so I went back to school and a friend of mine had said, hey, I just found out about this thing called podcasting. And I remember Googling it. This is back in like late 2004 and there just wasn't anything. And so I kind of looked into it and 2005 rolled around and I was like, wow, this is really, really cool. And I needed something to help pay the bills because I decided to go back to school. And at the time, everybody's like, oh, membership sites are going to be the next big thing. And so I thought, well, if supply and demand is still in effect here, people are going to need to know how to do this podcasting thing. Mm-hmm. Membership sites should be, okay, let's see if this works. So I started the School of Podcasting and was going to school during the day and doing, or even evening, depending on how things worked. And launched the School of Podcasting. And as I learned how to podcast, that just became the next tutorial. Yeah. And so that was 10 years ago. And over the years, I've refined the process as technology changes and new things come up. But it's the ultimate because I'm also a musician. So podcasting is creative. I love that. I get to get my geek on with all the fun gear and everything else. And it's also then I use it for a teaching mechanism. So it just scratches every itch I have to scratch. And started in 2005 and I start a new podcast about every other year just to start something from scratch and see how it works.
Interesting. So a lot of questions coming out of that. So in terms of technology, right now it's June 2015. What is your, aside from mic setup, which I think is pretty straightforward, but hosting wise, what is your go-to hosting company?
Yeah, my go-to hosting company for media is Libsyn. Mm-hmm. I've been with those guys since, really early 2005. I like Blueberry as well, but you get more space with Libsyn and I just like the fact that you hit publish and it goes to a billion different places at once. And then for web hosting, I've been using HostGator for about close to 20 years at this point.
Okay. Yep. So I also use Libsyn. I have just started recommending some customers for Podcast Motor really check out Blueberry. I think they have their analytics are at least as good, I think, as Blueberry or as Libsyn. And the thing I like about it from, person in kind of podcasting service business is being able to upload a file directly within a WordPress post
for Blueberry. I actually toy around with the idea of creating a plugin for Libsyn to upload from within a WordPress post, and even potentially have the option to run something through a service like Ophonix. I don't know. Are you familiar with Ophonix? Like kind of filtering?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I love that thing.
Yeah, and, yeah.
Blueberry's actually, or not Blueberry, Libsyn is actually, they're working on a plugin.
Oh, are they? Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's it's not a limitation, but it's just one more place to screw up, right? I mean, you're uploading over here, you copy it over wrong. If you don't hit verify URL, it doesn't do all the processing. And yeah, so I agree. I mean, those are the two I go to. A lot of people seem to want to use SoundCloud. And I say that's fine, but if I can sway their decision making any, I kind of go straight to Libsyn or Blueberry. Yep.
Yeah,
I'm glad I'm on the right track there.
Yeah, that's my top two. Yeah. I'm with you. SoundCloud isn't horrible. It just to me, anything that took 3 years to come out of beta,
sure.
Like what the heck?
Well, and my experience is it's tough to own the feed with SoundCloud.
Yeah.
You know, with Blueberry and Libsyn, you know that it's all running through your WordPress site. At least the one SoundCloud customer that I have, I submitted the SoundCloud feed, not running it through like PowerPress or something like that. So
yeah,
I screwed that up, but that seemed to be the easiest way to do it for SoundCloud.
Yeah, they do have the ability to redirect it, which is kind of good. So in the event you really want to leave, you can, but that would change the that would update iTunes. I'm not sure what would happen for your beta users at that point. And that's where I'm kind of like, it's like, all right, it kind of works.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't seem as straightforward as like changing a WordPress hosting account or something. That's just you move the domain, move the database over, and you're good. Moving a podcast, it seems kind of nuclear to me. I don't think I want to touch that.
Yeah, it's a little tricky.
Yeah, yeah. So, podcasting school and teaching people about podcasting, can you kind of run through what that looks like today? What are you focusing on? What's the educational materials that you're putting out? What do they look like?
Yeah, some of it is a lot of people skip the planning process. They hear about podcasting, they think it's cool and it's great and everybody has one, so I need one, and they'll go out and spend, you know, in some cases, thousands of dollars on equipment, and I'll be great. What's your podcast about? And they're like, I'm still trying to figure that out. And I'm like, whoa, we got the cart way in front of the horse. And so I try to kind of slow people down and, you know, what is your target audience? What do they need to hear? You know, what are you going to provide? You know, what are people going to do with your content, or how do you want them to feel? One of the two, you know, and so I try to get people to kind of focus really on their audience, because we're also worried about, I got to get this out. And they put up their own, their deadlines. And I'm like, I appreciate deadlines. I love that sense of urgency that they create. Mm-hmm. But I've seen so many people make horrible decisions because it's got to be out next week. And I'm like, why? The world has waited, 32 years for your podcast. Why can't it wait another 2 weeks?
Yeah.
So we go over planning, and a lot of stuff I have is on working with people to get the right equipment. Because there really isn't, as much as people try to say there's one size fits all, just buy this podcast package and you'll be good. And that's true. You can buy a lot of equipment, but I've had so many people go, well, so I don't need this mixer? No, not really. If you're just going to podcast solo, you don't really need a mixer. There are other ways around it. And so it's kind of interesting, because so many people are getting into the space right now that has a somebody coming in brand new to podcasting, it's like, you just get bombarded with different messages, and there are best practices that I think we all kind of agree on, but it is kind of tough. So for me, I start with planning and branding, and then that gets kind of weird, because you do have some people that just want to do it for fun, and that's perfectly okay as well. But again, that person shouldn't be spending, $8 zillion on a microphone when they just don't need that kind of technology. So I do that. And then you get into the really techie stuff, building your website, and, I have some insights on WordPress and some decent plugins and things like that. And then from there, it's, if you want to monetize, and there's no rule that says you have to monetize, but there are different strategies you can use to try to monetize, and just realize that, it's going to take some time. The first thing you need is an audience. And, there's a stat from Todd Cochran from Blueberry that said a lot of people don't make it past episode 7 because I'm in iTunes. I've done all the hard work. And, I've got 80 people downloading my show, why can't I quit my day job yet? And it's like, oh, you know, it's going to take a little time to get that kind of audience and get that kind of loyalty. And, you know, you have to earn people's trust. So it's, I try to set people's expectations, yeah, not to poo-poo their dreams, but just go, hey, you know, this isn't going to happen overnight. And by having them, dash their dreams because they spent so much money on equipment that they don't need, by having a nice plan of here's where we're going, and more importantly, how are we going to get there? It just seems to work smoother. And that way they kind of know what to expect, and they're not, they make it past episode 7.
Yeah. No, I think you're right on it, man. And the emails that I send out to people that ask me about this, the first question I say is, you need to think about why you're podcasting. Yeah. Whether it's you want to get your name out there in your personal brand, you want to sell your product or service or course, you want to create brand awareness. That's the first question you have to answer. And then the second question you have to answer is, what is your unique voice? What is the thing you can talk about? You can sit there and talk to 50 different people about every day and know everything about it, be passionate about it, be dynamic, have interesting and unique conversations and a good perspective on it. And if you nail those two things, then sitting down in front of the mic for an hour every week shouldn't be that hard, right? If you don't get both of those, though, then you're going to flip on the mic one day and say, what the fuck am I doing here, from both perspectives, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I always tell people, if you can't identify the why, you're never going to make it through the how.
Mm-mm, no. And the other thing you touched on that I think is hilarious is I see, we have with Podcast Motor, we have a handful of guys just starting shows. And the thing that gets me is they say, all right, we got our first show done. Go ahead and submit the feed to iTunes. And I do, because I say, okay, that's fine. You know, if you're not terribly worried about getting new and noteworthy, then that's fine. I understand you want to get it up, get it visible. And these are people that are podcasting for business. So they're not necessarily worried about getting, 10,000 downloads an episode. If they get 100 of the right downloads, that's great for their business. Right. But I think that's a mistake a lot of people make, is say, oh, I have one, maybe two shows done, I'm going to submit this to iTunes. Whereas like for this show, this is probably the 12th or 15th episode we've done. I'm going to submit to iTunes probably 10 episodes all at once, right? Because they're 20 minutes long. And just the talking about like kind of rigging or engineering new and noteworthy, I think if you can have someone find your show and say, wow, this is cool, I want to listen to all these episodes, you're going to get 10 downloads from that one person instead of one or two. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know what new and noteworthy really is. I don't think anybody does, kind of like the Google algorithms, but it's definitely ratings, reviews, and downloads. And if you only have one show to download, you need a lot more people than if you have 10 episodes for one person to download.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just launched a show about the app called Clamor. It's called the Clamorcast. It's a top 20 show. And I was amazed because I launched it, I think, with 3 episodes. And it had been so long since I'd launched a new show. It was interesting because the third episode was the first one that people would get to see, okay, do people go back and download the second and the first one? And they do, not as much as that third one, but they do go back and download those. And that is part of the algorithm. Yeah. It's downloads, ratings, and reviews. And, yeah, sure enough, I got into new and noteworthy. I have seen people do it with one episode. I have a client of mine, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, does Win the Diet War, which she had a really popular blog. So when she came out with one episode and, hey, I'm in iTunes, her whole, army went over and subscribed, and, she shot up right the charts. So it's not impossible, but it's nice to have those additional downloads.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think that I have a similar customer. I have two big names in the kind of internet space, and I have no doubt they have 6 or 7 episodes out now in a week, and they'll get new and noteworthy, I think, just because they can email their list of 10, 20,000 people and say, hey, go download one show and they should get there. So that's pretty interesting. So what's the magic number? You said you launched with 3 episodes. What do you suggest to people when they're launching a podcast? Don't just do it with one, don't do it with two. Probably is 3, 4, 5 kind of all the same, or?
Yeah, I think so. Cause in the end, I know it's nice to be in new and noteworthy, but week 9 is coming. Well, first of all, let's shoot that theory down. You don't have only 8 weeks to be in new and noteworthy. You have 8 weeks to be new. You can be noteworthy anytime. I see TV shows that have, they'll podcast about a TV series. Well, every time the series goes on hiatus, they go down the charts because in many cases they don't do new episodes. And then, hey, it's the new episode, new season of, Once Upon a Time. Downloads go up, ratings go up, reviews go up, and they go right back in New and Noteworthy. So every time I hear somebody say, you only have 8 weeks to be in New and Noteworthy, I'm like, that is absolutely a lie. You have 8 weeks to be new. You can be noteworthy anytime. And so to me, you know, week nine is always coming. It's nice to be in New and Noteworthy, but what happens when you're not in New and Noteworthy? You still have to create good content. You still have to connect with your audience. You still have to market it. So, you know, I always do the best I can to create the best episode, but in the end, whether I'm in New and Noteworthy isn't going to affect how I create my show. It's going to affect how it's consumed. So it's great. And absolutely, you want to take advantage of that. But Rob Walsh of Libsyn did a great session at New Media Expo. And he pointed out that, yes, you get a boost, but it's not the thousands of downloads that people think you're going to get. And that's not to blow it off, because hundreds of downloads is always welcome, and tens of downloads is always welcome. But sometimes I think we get a little obsessed over New and Noteworthy, and we focus so much on iTunes that we're not focusing on our audience. We're focusing on just stats and numbers, and stats and numbers don't hit the download button.
Yeah,
people do.
Because, and like you're saying, I think it makes that dip afterwards when you hit week nine really hard, because then you say, I was doing so great, my numbers were up so high. Maybe you even get a sponsor or something like that. You definitely get cocky at least. And then week nine comes and you get a smack in the face and you're like, oh, geez, now I gotta go do that show with the big guest and launch it to 200 people instead of, you know, 5,000 or whatever. Yeah.
Well, and this is where my background in teaching, I always say, please never put the word only in front of your stats. So when I hear somebody say, well, I've only got 80 downloads. Well, as a teacher, typically my classes are about, you know, 20 students in a class. So when somebody says only 80 downloads, I think of that as 80 people. That's four full classrooms. And I'm like, if I had four full classrooms that showed up to listen to me talk for 20 minutes, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Now, right.
Granted, it's hard to sell an advertisement to 80 people, but there are other ways. I'm not a huge fan of the CPM. You know, it's great if you've got the big downloads, but I don't think that's going to work for about 92% of the audience, because I've heard that only 8% of people on Libsyn get 5,000 downloads per episode. So that's usually what, you know, the big national sponsors are looking for. And that's where it's kind of cool in some ways. You can go out and approach a company that really fits your niche. And they don't even, I've had people not even ask how many downloads I've had. They said, oh, wow, you're doing a show about weight loss. We have this product. And I go, yeah, I like it. And they're like, great. And they came on as a sponsor. So in some cases, they're just excited because you have their target audience.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I think that the one thing that I've learned in podcasting, and, you know, again, a dozen different conversations with podcasters like you, and across a pretty big variety of types of shows and different goals they have with their podcast, is that you don't need to listen what anybody else is doing and why they're doing it with their show, because your goals and the strategy you implement to get there needs to be solely for you and the business you have underneath your show.
Amen, brother. Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, the way that Adam Clark does it, or the way that the Gimlet guys do it, isn't right for me. It's probably not right for you. And just kind of take a tidbit of this or that or the other and implement it for your show.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can try to be Pat Flynn, but I'm not Pat Flynn. And it's not going to come natural to me, which means it's going to be kind of hard and tough and not as fun. And, you know, you're never going to out Pat Flynn at being Pat Flynn. Be you, be the best you can be. And, you know, connect with your audience, find out what they need, how you can help them. And that'll get you much farther than trying to be somebody you're not.
Yeah, for sure. So, hey, let me ask you about advertising. It's something I find just fascinating. And like you said, I think the CPM model isn't exactly right. I think there's some different ways people are going to start doing it in the future. But just in general with advertising, are you seeing a lot of people that you're associated with or come out of your classes or whatnot getting really good revenue directly from advertising, not from, like, you know, selling a course or selling a service, but direct monetization from their podcast?
Not in terms of like a, Squarespace, for lack of a better phrase. You know, most of the people that I work with are in some cases promoting a business, or in some cases they're just trying to get the word out, maybe about a cause or things of that nature. But a lot of them are starting to really use things like Patreon, and affiliate marketing seems to be kicking into gears. If you can get the right product with the right audience, I know for myself, I do a weight loss podcast. And at one point I calculated a $50 CPM with Fitbit, because my audience just loved it. It fit their their budget. And every time they bought one, I made $9 and wow. They just went off the shelf. So yeah, I've seen some things go up, but a lot of times it is, I think more and more people are using it to get the old, you know, like, and trust me, and then you can buy my product. I see a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And I think it is because so many sponsors want that 5,000 downloads per episode. And when you first come out of the gate, you're not there yet. So it might be something we see more in the future, but, I have some people, seen some people that, not quit your day job money yet, but you know, stuff you're like, all right, I'll take, you know, $300-$400 a month for,
$300 money.
Yeah, exactly. With a Patreon account. And when you start tying in all those little things, okay, I've got, you know, I made, you know, $100 here on Amazon. I made, you know, they're $50 with ClickBank or whatever. And then I got another 150 from Patreon. All of a sudden you're like, okay, that's, you know, that's a car payment. I'll take that.
No, I think you're spot on. And the Rainmaker guys, you know, Brian Clark and the guys from Studio Press that do Genesis, they say the same thing. Of course, they're kind of, they're using their podcast to promote their Rainmaker platform, which is kind of a way to sell and teach and all this kind of stuff. But they're saying now, and John Lee Dumas is saying the same thing, because it's exactly what you see when you read his income report, that the best way to monetize a podcast is with a course.
Yeah.
And so that's what you're seeing too, right? You have a podcast or podcasts to build your brand and sell the teaching modules and options and products that you have, and you've become an authority on because you've been podcasting for so long and teaching people about it and been kind of immersed in this space, right?
Yeah. And I've, you know, there are other ways to monetize. Like, I've been asked to speak at different things. Last year I was appointed the director of podcasting for the New Media Expo. So that's another side gig I have going on. And so, along with those, and then what I do is I use a coupon. You know, when you sign up to the School of Podcasting, in my podcast, I say, if you use the coupon listener, you can, you know, save a little bit on your first month. And I would say 80% of the people that sign up at my site, because that's the only place you can hear it. You will not see that in writing anywhere. You can hear it in a podcast, but you won't see it on my website. So I know anybody that used that coupon, they heard my podcast. And I would say about 80% of the people that sign up, they're using that coupon.
So that gets at sort of tracking your traffic, right? So you know those are the people that come from your podcast. I think that's a challenge that I see with my shows and with customers, is how to move people from having their earbuds in and driving or running or walking the dog or whatever to doing something with what you're saying. You know, your call to actions can be concise and simple, but I think it's still a bigger gap to jump across than like it is on a blog, right? Because you just click the link and you're there and you buy the thing, but now it's like, put the iPhone down, go to the website, and I think it's just a bigger challenge that we're all having to address, but I think we're getting there in terms of how to bridge the gap between on-air and off-air engagement.
Yeah, that is, it's always been the challenge. And that's where, if you're using WordPress, there's a great plugin called Pretty Link that you can make easy to remember links. Like if you go to schoolofpodcasting.com/iTunes, that just takes you right to iTunes. But I think we've all learned, it used to be, it was hilarious. At the end of the show, it'd be like, you know, go to iTunes, follow me on Stitcher, blah, blah, blah. Here's my phone number. Here's my email. Here's my SpeakPipe. And so now, like for me, I just have schoolofpodcasting.com/contact. And then if you want to call me, email me, speak by me, they're all there, because it just was hilarious. At the end of these shows, we all would have these 20-minute call to actions that in the end just left people confused and dazed. So, yeah. You know, instead of saying subscribe to me in Stitcher and iTunes and TuneIn and all these other places, I just go to schoolofpodcasting.com/subscribe. And then the other thing I think that a lot of people drop the ball on, myself included, I just noticed this last week. I went, I'm not doing that, is put instructions. You know, when you say go to subscribe page, you know, say, here's how you subscribe to my show. You know, go to the podcast app, click on this button, you know, type in the name and just walk them through it, because not everybody is geeky as you are. And so you're probably listening to podcasts. If you're listening, obviously, if you're hearing this, you're listening to podcasts, but your audience may not be. And so, you know, take them by the hand and get them to where you need to be and help them subscribe. And that then, that's the best when you have a subscriber, because they're just automatically downloading it every time you put out a new episode.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I've seen people start to do some unique things with, I don't want to call it opt-in bait, but that kind of, you know, content incentive for people that subscribe. So I actually got an email today for a new show that said, if you subscribe to the show on iTunes, reply to this email and tell me that you subscribed and you'll get this X, whatever, ebook, incentive, PDF, resource. And I thought that was pretty cool because that's a pretty creative way to one, track people, two, probably get people on your email list, and three, get people to subscribe.
Yeah. I've heard people now say, be sure to mention your website in your review. And then they'll review. That way you're getting plugged. You know, an easy way to get plugged on the show then is review the show. And I'll say, you know, thanks to so-and-so from blahblahblah.com for reviewing the show. It's an easy way to get a plug. So it's kind of a way to scratch their back because they scratched yours. And I'm starting to hear more and more people use services to, you know, text 396 to whatever, and you'll get my, you know, guide to such and such. And that's a way to get people on your email list. I'll be interested to see how long it takes to, I'm sure they are, you know, text this to that. Now that you're on my email list, probably the second email will be click here to subscribe to my podcast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And my understanding, those are sort of expensive though, right? Those text services.
Yeah. I mean, I know Lead Pages have one. There was one I was using for a while. It was like $30 a month. I forget. It was text to something, text to subscribe or something like that. But, you know, it all comes back to, you know, kind of tracking your return on investment. So if you can track that, you know, this person joined the course because he joined the email list because of this, because of that, when you can kind of track that, then you're like, okay, I spent $30, but I got, you know, four students for it, definitely paid for it. And then you can keep moving on.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hey, one last question for you here, Dave. What is the one kind of gap and probably technology gap that you're seeing in podcasting right now?
Technology gap.
And you can't Android. Say you can't say tracking.
Yeah, I would say Android right now. I know the folks are at Blueberry because, you know, Apple, they embraced podcasting early and Google has just abandoned it in many ways. And so it's sad to hear so many Android phones are purchased every year. And it's like a 6-to-1 ratio of people listening to podcasts on an Apple device versus an Android because, you know, now you've got there's no like one click subscribe. And so the folks over at Blueberry have come up with the code to make it easy to subscribe. Now they've got to get this code into all the Android podcast app, which I understand is fairly easy to implement, but you know, you've got to convince people that it's worth it and things like that. So to me, I see the Android market as a huge opportunity. It's just a matter of we're not going to get any help from Google. I think at this point, we've all just kind of waved the white flag, and that's why folks like Blueberry are trying to come up with their own technology to make it easy to subscribe.
All right, Dave. Well, hey, let's wrap it up. Tell folks where they can find out more about School of Podcasting and about you and your shows.
Yeah, you can find me at schoolofpodcasting.com. And then all my shows about podcasting are in one place. You can find that at powerofpodcasting.com.
Awesome. All right. Well, hey, Dave, thanks so much for coming on the show today. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks. It was great being here.